Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Nancy Bo Flood. Nancy believes that storytelling has the power to build compassion and bridge understanding between cultures. And throughout her life, she's used story in her counseling work with children and young adults. She and her husband, who's a pediatrician, Dr. Bill Flood, have lived in Malawi, Africa, Hawaii, Japan, and for the last 20 years, they've been on the Navajo Nation. Nancy's the author of 20 books, many of them for children and young adults. We began our conversation talking about her grandparents who came from Czechoslovakia and Italy. Her grandfather came from Czechoslovakia when he was 12, having lost his mother and father. He walked 400 miles to Germany, where he boarded a boat to America and eventually to Iowa. Nancy's mother's parents fled Italy to avoid the endless wars that marked the country's early beginnings. They settled in Illinois. Did you start in Iowa?
Nope, started in Illinois, the same town where my grandparents were, both grandparents, the Czech as well as the Italian, in a town that was divided because the Czech and the Italians did not get along. So my parents' story was a little bit of Romeo and Juliet, like, the Catholic Italians are not supposed to mingle with Protestant Czech. Well, they did. And I'm glad of it. So, yes, grew up in that same little town, Braidwood, Illinois, coal mining town. My dad was a coach, a teacher. He loved basketball, and he loved teaching math. And my folks moved up closer to Chicago. And that's where my husband and I met, which eventually then part of this story is that we were both in Minnesota. I was in graduate school, and he was in medical school. And we had this dream. Our dream was we really wanted to travel around the world and see some of it. So we saved our pennies, and we did just that. So it's funny to think about how young we were, but we really did fall in love. But he continued on to the University of Illinois. He was one of their gymnastic competitors. And I eventually went on to Beloit College. But all this time we stayed in correspondence.
Why did you go to Beloit? What took you there?
Because it was a place my parents could help me afford. Uh-huh. How's that? And
there
I got
you
a
go.
Really good scholarship.
Uh-huh.
So that
right.
was the decision maker. I became very involved or very interested in the study of the brain at Beloit. One of my teachers, mentors, it's amazing how a person can have so much influence, but she was wonderful, and I just became fascinated with how the brain works or doesn't work.
Did you go there with that intent?
I wanted to be in science,
right.
But I was studying animal behavior because I also am very interested in animals. We used to have a whole mess of animals
really?
In our house.
Growing up was...
Horses. Well, growing up on a farm, and then even in Glenwood Springs, well, later on, it was horses and cats and dogs and chickens and so on. But also, animal behavior is so informative in terms of human behavior.
Uh-huh.
So I thought that's what I wanted to be, and then I got sidetracked a little bit. I chose to work with fish when I was doing my graduate research up at University of Minnesota because I didn't feel so badly about hurting them when I was doing experiments.
Really? That was your choice?
I was also studying about autistic children way back then and looking at the problems with memory and emotion, the control of emotion, and motivation to learn.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Nancy Bo Flood. Nancy is a therapist, a teacher, a parent, and a storyteller who has written 20 books, many of them for children and young adults. And for the last 20 years, she and her husband, Bill, have lived and worked in Navajo Nation. So did you know when you were going to school that where you were headed? with this study?
Oh, no. I think, we often talk to our children about that, is that every path you take informs, I strongly believe, informs wherever it is you eventually get to.
Right.
But you don't always know that. Because I think, I was studying child development, and particularly both autistic children and children that had developmental delays or learning difficulties. So, of course, that links right to the brain, right? You know, that's so fundamental. But I didn't put that together to start with, nor did I put that together with eventually writing books for children, which actually all my life was like a passion in terms of both reading and writing.
You said all your life. So it was a root.
From the very beginning, I loved reading. I have five brothers and a sister, and my older brother, just a year older, he got to go to kindergarten first. But when he came home, he would teach me to read because I wanted to read just like he did. So he taught me to read, and I just loved books. And I started writing, but what I loved doing, and it's interesting, again, how things circle back. So the grandmother that I was, in terms of my, immigrant story,
right.
I was very close to her. She really never left the state of Illinois, except once. And I had a chance to do a lot of traveling. And what I loved doing was describing and telling her about a place and the people so she could be there too. And it's probably one of the best trainings there is in terms of, you know, being a writer. Like, what would Grandma notice? I have to tell her how it smells. Oh, just, you know, smell the... I wanted my grandmother to be able to see it and hear it and smell it and taste it. And so I love writing letters, and I still do. I wish it wasn't a dying art in the United States. But anyway, it's interesting how all of this is connected. It doesn't seem very connected. But then as I did research with children, I became more and more interested in intervention. Okay, how can we make this better for kids, right? And I found that probably one of the most powerful ways is through story. That one thing that children do, if they have a traumatic event, or an exciting event, we know how they retell and retell and retell, and sometimes you just kind of want to cover your ears because they're still talking about it.
Well, and they play it out.
They act it, right? Whether it's with their dolls or with their stuffed animals,
yeah,
or
right.
Make believe and let's do a drama, you know? Right? They keep playing it out until there's some kind of mastery or some kind of sense of understanding, which is what story is all about. And so I thought, you know, the power of story, it informs us, but it also heals us.
Yeah.
And that to me, as you can see, it's like, oh, this is what I want to do. This is really what I want to do.
Do you remember where that light went on? Where were you? When all those roads convened.
Coming together. It was actually right here in Glenwood Springs because I was part of child and family counseling. There were four of us women who founded a counseling center. And as I was working with kids, especially children who had been abused at a young age, as I watched them doing exactly what you said, Walter, replay, and then be able to replay, but change the story. So, right.
The healing part.
Like, no, when that person comes to hurt me, I'm not going to stay right here. I'm going to get out of here, or I'm going to call for help, or I'm going to bite them.
Yes.
And it takes a lot of retelling before a child gets to that point to just have that sense of power, you know, empowerment. What I realized was that there, in using good stories, that it really helped the child to see and to, in a sense, experience. Because in a good story, you're right in there with the character, right?
Yes.
And so you experience what that character in that story is doing. And it gives you another alternative of what to do. Maybe scream or yell or run out or, you know, go to somebody who can help you, somebody, an adult that you trust. So,
if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Nancy Beau Flood. Nancy is the author of 20 books, many of them for young children. Here she's describing her work with young children and their trauma and her inspiration for trying to write a book that might help them in some way. So you wanted to tell stories that would help some of those kids, particularly the little girl that you were way back when, right?
That's right.
To sit down with a book that somehow guides you or lets you feel like you're not alone.
One of the stories that was a long time before I would talk about is when I was only seven, my younger sister was five, and she was killed crossing a street.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, and I was, as all children are, profoundly affected when there's a death in the family. As a child, one thing I realized was you also lose your parents for a while. My parents were lost in grief.
Oh, yeah.
And somehow, whether it was my grandmother who said something, I don't have any idea, but somehow I did have an awareness that in time, my parents would be back. I mean, they never left physically, but they were not reachable for me. But also as a child, I felt profoundly responsible for that death. I felt guilty for that death. And okay, you go, well, how can a seven-year-old, you know? And
yeah.
It happened while I was at school. She was home from kindergarten. And because I'd gotten angry with her the night before, and that caused the death. Or maybe it was because, it doesn't matter. It's something I certainly learned in my studies, you know, cognitively, but I had to learn it in my heart, was that children believe that, it's like I sometimes say, if they can believe in Santa Claus, they can believe in anything, right?
Yes.
And they even can believe, like I could believe, it was my fault. It was my fault this terrible thing happened. But I never told anybody. And when I was way grown up, and my youngest brother at the time, he was only three, and he was with my sister when the accident happened. And for the first time, we were talking about that experience. And he said, it was my fault. And I said, oh, Tom, all these years we both have carried that. And if there had been a story to help us, you know, to help us even open that conversation, to talk about how we really felt, and to maybe share, you know, retell the story.
But, you know, even a lot of times it's put away because they don't think kids can manage that. So it's just repressed. We don't talk about it because it'll upset everyone, rather than we need to allow the children to talk about it and act it out and make peace with it.
Make peace with it, right. And I found through, when I worked with older children, by older it doesn't need to be very much older, but it certainly is, it's the experience of most children when something awful happens in a family. If only I had said, if only I hadn't spilled the milk, or if whatever it is, it doesn't make any difference.
And it's not restricted to children, is it? It's
there,
the survivor guilt that people have when someone dies and they feel like it should have been them in some way.
Exactly. Exactly right. Yeah, it should have been me. My sister was the cute one. My sister was, a charming and little and wonderful. I wasn't wonderful. Why didn't I die? You're absolutely right, you know. And yet...
How did you get through it? Do you remember how you've... I'm sure you must have some memory of how you felt then.
Well, I think I think I didn't really get through it until I was older and I started writing about it. And that was my way to...
Because everybody put it away, your parents included.
Everybody put it away. You know, my folks never said, don't talk about it. But I, again, it's a nonverbal language.
You didn't have to be told.
I didn't have to be told. You know, I knew if I even mentioned the anything to do with my sister Peggy or what happened, my mom would dissolve, my dad would turn away, people would start crying, and I didn't want, you know... I didn't want to do that, so you don't talk about it.
So right. did that have anything to do with you pursuing psychology? Was that part of that?
You know, I never thought about it, but I'm sure you're right. Yeah, I wanted to understand what, you know,
the brain, how these
memories,
things.
Right? And then of these memories, how they get connected or influence our choices, our behavior, not only our emotions. I realized when my own children were growing, I became really phobic about something awful happening to them once they approached the age of 4 or 5. I was a frantic mom about, oh my gosh, they're going to die. Because in my experience, I mean, I couldn't say it to myself cognitively. I mean, And until there was a realization, why do I have this doom of feeling, you know? If I don't do everything right as a mother to protect them, if I slip up,
yeah,
I'm going to lose them. And it was a long time to realize that where all that was connected, which then gets connected, interesting, to, you know, so what do I write about? I do write about loss and grieving. And how do we get through it? And how can we get through it better than blaming ourselves for years and years?
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher. And my interview today is with Nancy Beau Flood. Nancy is the author of 20 books, many of them for children and young adults. And for the last 20 years, she and her husband, Bill, have lived and worked in the Navajo Nation. So all this led to the storyteller in you.
Yes, it's funny. As I have thought about it, as I've gotten older, I've thought, oh, there's this thread, and there is this thread.
The quilt,
right? That truly, I have always loved stories, but I probably another part is. of my grandmother, when I can always remember her soothing me when I was upset. But I sit on her lap, and she either sang to me or told me a story. Yeah. And it was like, there's nothing nicer than to sit on a grandma's lap.
Well, it is the essence of us, isn't it? We are all, at the base, storytellers.
Well, I feel that way, and as I've been in other cultures, so a book I'm working on right now is called Many Ways We Tell Our Stories, because every group of people I've ever been in with or read about is such a human thing. We want to tell our stories.
Yes.
We've been on the Navajo Nation, you know, for almost 20 years, and
what is it that takes you back there? What is that made you stay?
We were a good question, because we thought we were going to go for 2 or maybe 3 years.
Uh-huh.
The desert, I think, is for me, it's a place of sanctuary, peace, calm, and then to get to know the Navajo people. They taught us so much, and I think. We both just felt so welcomed, always welcomed, but always learning something deeper about life, how to live life. One of their sayings is, Hojo, Hojo, walk in beauty. Whatever is happening to us, seek harmony, which means forgiveness, which is really hard. to accept what does happen and look for what you can do to contribute to reestablishing harmony.
Talk about your new book, the one that was just published that you collaborated with. I'm forgetting her name, please.
Rose Tahe.
Yeah.
Yes. Rose was someone close to my age, Navajo elder. She was a substitute teacher when I met her. I was teaching for Dine College, the Navajo College, and also for Northern Arizona University. She was working on getting her special certification in reading. She already had her master's. Now, a remarkable woman. She was fluent in Navajo, written and spoken. She was more fluent than I in English, written and spoken. And she still wanted to learn and to do more. She was very crippled with arthritis, but she wanted to write stories for children. She wanted to create stories for children because she felt books were so important to...
Yeah, a storyteller.
To healing, to learning, you know, to sharing perspective. So we started, I had started a writing group, and of course she was part of it, and then... she was one of the few that stuck through it because writing is hard. And so I said, you know, I think a very special story that the Navajo have that no other tribal nation I know has, which is about celebrating first laughter. And one is, of course, the whole fun of getting a baby to laugh. But at another level, laughter for the Navajo is sacred. It makes us fully human. It's a way of healing. So when whoever gets a baby to first laugh becomes a special person, like a godparent to that child.
Really?
Yeah. And then there's this very special ceremony where that person then, everybody comes, everybody from the different, related clans come, and the parents have a special basket. If it's a girl baby, it'll become her wedding basket. But it's a special basket that has salt, and it has to be salt from the earth, not salt like you buy from the grocery shelf. Salt in it, and then when the guests are there, you give them a little piece of salt on their tongue, and it's to remind them that always we share whatever we have, and we take care of each other. Isn't that beautiful?
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. So the laugh is a sacred thing.
It's a sacred thing. And
The girl carries that. What is there a similar tradition for the boy?
The boy does not have a wedding basket.
No.
No. Yeah. It's a matriarchal society. So there's quite a few. Like there's this a very elaborate 3-day ceremony for the girl when she comes into her menses.
Uh-huh.
But there's a little bit of a ceremony for a boy, but it's nothing like there is for the girl. Because for the Navajo, the woman carries the ability to procreate, you know.
Right.
And that's very honored.
Yeah.
It's very honored.
As well it should be.
Yes.
You know, the salt on the tongue, you know, is so reminiscent of other rituals like in the Catholic Church.
Catholic, yes.
This is a sacred piece of Mother Earth that sustains us. Talk about your new book that's, what did you call it? It's now in the fold.
I Will Dance. Will Dance in the F&G, the Folded and Gathered. So so my book is about a young girl who barely lived as a premature, but then from the time she was 3, and this based on a real girl that I interviewed is... she wanted to dance. For her 5th birthday, she wanted a pink tutu. And what so much struck me when I was talking with her is she said to her mom, I want to dance. And the first was, well, let's pretend you're dancing. And she said, no, I don't want to pretend.
No pretending.
And then when she had her first teacher... who agreed to be like lead teacher, and she was the only student and just on the dance floor, was, let's imagine you're dancing. And she said, no, I don't want to imagine. I want to dance. And so that's what the story is about.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what I Will Dance is about. And it's probably, again, reaches from someplace deep inside me that I haven't completely figured out. But I do know this, is that my sister who died.
Yes.
She and I danced together. And no one I will cry. and we loved dancing together. And when she died, this I did ask my mother. I said, "Mom, can Peggy dance up in heaven?" And my mom said, "I'm sure she's dancing up in heaven." So somehow it's connected.
Yeah, somehow it's all connected.
It is, yeah.
Nancy Beau Flood, thanks for sitting down with me for Immigrant Stories.
It's been my pleasure entirely. Thank you.
That was Nancy Beau Flood. Nancy's book, First Laugh, Welcome Baby, was published in 2018. Her new book, I Will Dance, will be published in 2020. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on Immigrant Stories, go to our website, immigrantstories.net, or subscribe on iTunes for our podcast. Thanks for listening.